investing for retirement, and I call it A because I don't know how much of this will blend or bleed over to next week's lesson. This is the longest and most difficult for me to get within the time frame. What I'm covering today is typically done in an hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half. I do this with missionaries, with BWM, but we'll get through what I can today, and the rest will be moved over. I want to say something, though, about last week, something I did not have an opportunity to finish, and that is on the area of life insurance. We talked about that a bit. SelectQuote, back 5 years ago, my term life policy was coming up for renewal. That it was a 20-year term that we'd gotten just when we got here to Alabama. Julie and I got each of our own. And you have an option. If you want a $50,000 policy or less, you can just ask for it and they give it to you. They don't need a huge, they don't need blood work or anything like that, and their questions are very simple and vague sometimes, and you can get it. But if you wanted a greater policy than that, for a lower cost, the way to do it is to get blood work done. Now, back in 2018, I was at 262 pounds, roughly, and decided at that point I needed to do something with myself. So we're 2018. It's about a similar time frame to the policy, not quite. And this time, it was January 2018, I fasted for 3 days, or sorry, 3 weeks straight. Water and salt was it. Lost 30 pounds. And I had lost some as well before that. So in the end, I went from 262 to 222. And I had blood work done before my fast, and I had blood work done after my fast. And it turns out all my numbers corrected themselves in 3 weeks. My high blood pressure was normal. My high sugar levels were normal. Everything went from red, red, red to green, green, green. And then a few years later, here we need this new term life insurance policy. And I said, okay, what's the new rate going to be? And it went from $25 to $200 a month. I said, oh, no, that's not happening. I would die just trying to pay that extra amount, okay? That's not my plan. So I got onto SelectQuote. I looked around, and I wanted a policy bigger than $50,000, but I knew I wanted blood work done. I had green, green, green on this chart, right? So it turns out, after 20 years of age, my policy, I got a similar policy, $25 the first time, only $45 the second time. I realized, for those that can improve health, it will make a difference financially for you in that type of thing as well as other things. And so the thing is, then they said to me, hey, we can extend this longer if you want. I said, no, I'm not going to need it longer. He said, your health is good enough. We can do it for the same rate longer. I said, no, thanks. I don't need that. But just a side note, if you're going to do it, blood work, if you're in good health, the blood work is going to help you get lower rates on your term life insurance policy because it's less of a gamble and chance on their part. They know where you are at that time, and they will bring, you don't have to pay for this, they'll send a nurse or a nurse practitioner to your house or place of employment and take care of it all right there and go from there. Okay, that was a freebie. All right, now, let's move on. And I've asked you to go to Proverbs chapter 6. We'll cover that in a second. But I'm going to say right now, I'm not a financial advisor. I do not have all the letters beyond my name. I have MBA after my name, okay, in education. I don't have letters designating. What you'll find from me today is the result of, I don't know if it's hundreds of books on finance, probably not quite that, but lots of books, lots of YouTubes, lots of I went through a Larry Burkett course on financial counseling way back when. In fact, he was still alive at the time. But I'm going to give you not advice. I'm going to give you, as I did last week, ideas, information. You make your choice. Your situation will be different. Some of yours will be similar to mine, some not. But I want to cover retirement investing, knowing how much each month, for instance, to set aside for retirement. Next week, we'll talk more about some of that, but also when you're in the retirement years, what do you do then? How much do you draw? What can you do to help your draw rate so it won't hurt your investment so much? Those type of things. How you can get benefit from drawing certain funds out to lower your tax instead of increase your tax. Using your investments to help fund your tithe, for instance, things like that, okay? Someone had asked Larry Burkett this question or stated it, I believe Christians should not invest in the stock market. It promotes greed, and sometimes money is lost that could have been given to the church. Is there a scriptural justification for investing? That's a very interesting question. And the question makes it sound like investing in the stock market is not good for the church, for giving, for your Christian walk. That could be true, but not always. His answer takes us to Proverbs chapter 6. And Proverbs chapter 6, let me read a little bit of 6 and then jump. It says, go to the ant. And then it jumps to verse 7, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? And by the way, I left out the word sluggard in verse 6, but that's what the gentleman is called who does not pattern his life after an ant. She provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou rise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. Scripture likens the person that doesn't foresee the future need to have something set aside because there is going to be a gap of ability to provide at that time, says that person's a sluggard. The ant eats now and sets aside as well because at some point the food will be scarce and they have no choice but to draw on their reserves. That's what we're talking about today, retirement investing that is reserves. Now, some of you are Social Security and some of you may not be. Clergymen are given the option to opt out of Social Security if they choose for their ministerial income. If they had a side job at McDonald's, they still have to pay into Social Security. So some have opted out. Unfortunately, some have opted out to save money and have not done what the aunt has done. And they find themselves over here ready for retirement, and they get a pittance coming back from Social Security. Bad idea. BWM has a policy for its missionaries. If you opt out of Social Security, that's your choice. But you will set aside 15% of your income into a separate investment fund because we do not want the money piece to be mixed up to the point where you end up as a missionary over here ready to retire and you have to call on your supporters to help you because you were a sluggard. The Bible is very clear about that word. So, no, it's not always a bad thing to set aside money for a future when you know you may not have income. You know your health may, at that point, keep you from having income, keep you from having a job. So you plan for the future. Now I want to take you to something else, though. There is a balance because some have this idea, make all you can all you make philosophy. That's the other extreme. And the question that this person asked about the greed, that's where this comes in. Go to Luke chapter 12, because the Bible addresses this as well. And in Luke chapter 12, verse 16, and then he spake a parable unto them, saying, this is the Lord Jesus talking, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought with himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruit. And he said, this will I do. I'll pull down my barns, which, by the way, were probably already in good repair, and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruit and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool. So we've got a sluggard in one extreme, we've got a fool in the next. This night thy soul shall be required of thee, then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. So, we have two extremes. I'm not going to do anything. Sluggard is the term used. Now, here's the sad thing. In both of these pieces, you can have a Christian influence, Christian terminology. Here's how they go. I'm very careful about this. Your faith is your faith. You know how God provides. But there are some that use the terminologies as an excuse. Do you know what I'm getting at here? I have faith in God, therefore I'll not set anything aside for retirement. I have faith in God, and he's provided all this now. Be very careful if your heart is having a cloak and not thinking biblically about these two extremes if you're in one of them. What does God want from us? Here's the Lord's prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. Lord, provide my needs. Now, my daily bread is here, but it also comes in the form of my retirement years here. Daily bread. So what do we want? When we plan for retirement, it would be nice to plan so I just have enough to meet my needs, enough to give to the church, enough to give to the needs of others. Not excessive. You do not need $45 million. Now, if God blesses you in such a way, fine. But you don't need that. Much of that is at that point a want. Lord, give us this day our daily bread. Today's daily bread, my retirement daily bread. That's our goal. That's what we're looking for. Fidelity Investments did a survey, I think it was back in 2013, and it noted that 3 out of 4 people either did not have the time or the knowledge to invest their own for retirement. So they were given 2 options or 2 things that would happen. They wouldn't invest at all, or they would hire an investment person, okay, to do the work for them. Today I want to cover what are some investment things, what do they do, what do they mean, how can you use them. My goal, give us this day our daily bread. Meet the needs for you in retirement. Do not be a sluggard. Do not be a fool. Get that medium middle ground of knowing God provided a blessing and he gave you the wisdom to plan for that time period when you would not have work. Let's talk about bonds. I'll not make this long. But bonds are basically, it's a situation. When you buy a bond, you're lending money to the organization that issues it. The company, in return, promises to pay interest payments to you for the length of the loan. They may be quarterly, monthly, yearly, it's however it's set up. And then when they're done, they give you back the principal. So you gained interest all along, and then the principal comes to you in the end. If you sell a bond before its maturity date, there are ramifications. You may not get as much as you thought. Depends upon the bond prices and so on at the time that you do this. That's a bond. You're like a lender to a municipality or as in a government or something. And many of those are tax-free, by the way, or to a corporation. There's also stocks. And by the way, both of these can be traded on the market, okay, the stock market. Stocks, in this you own a share, or a share of stock is literally a share in the ownership of a company. When you buy a share of stock, you're entitled to a small fraction of the assets and earnings of that company. Assets include buildings, equipment, trademarks, and the earnings, they're all part of what you own. Now, you may own a tiny piece. Back when, they gave you a certificate. It was really pretty, and it was called a stock certificate, or a share of stock, or 2, 3, 4, whatever. They don't do the paper anymore. And the nice thing is, with electronic trading, you don't have to have full shares. You can have a half of a share or a quarter of a share or something like that. And when you go to your investment account, you can see how many shares you have and what you purchased. When the value of the company goes up, your share is worth more. When the value of the company goes down, your share is worth less. Now, the share or the price of this has very little to do with the worth of the company. It's sad, but that's true. Oftentimes, the price of a stock share is based upon company perception. Let me give you an idea of this. Some of you remember something called the Tylenol scare. That was a long time ago. On store shelves, Tylenol, we all know what Tylenol is, someone tampered with Tylenol and put poison in, and some people died because of it. Tylenol was a smart, the company, I don't remember if it was Eli Lilly or what, the company that owned Tylenol was very smart. They took all the Tylenol off all the shelves. You could not buy Tylenol. When that scare happened, though, stock price plummeted. Now, had they changed their president? No. Had they changed their philosophy? No. Had they changed Tylenol's makeup in some way? No. What was it? Perception. Individual perception said, boy, you know, you're all thinking as I'm thinking, maybe it's something that happened in the creation of the Tylenol on the assembly line, or not assembly line, but, you know, whatever, automated floor or whatever. The truth is, no, that didn't happen. It was an outsider that did it. But them taking off Tylenol, taking it off all the shelves. Then it came out how it happened. Their stock price went up. Why? Because they were interested in people, right? They didn't want them to die. They didn't know what the problem was, how it had happened, transpired, whatever. Perception is a big thing in the stock market as far as the price of the stocks. Never buy a stock based on its price. Oh, it's up today, I'm going to buy. Never buy it based on what you hear from CNN, the five best stocks to buy. Do you realize what you're doing? You're going to buy in when everyone buys in. You're going to pay a premium for this piece of stock. Bad idea. Someone made a lot of money, most likely just before the guy said buy these, he bought them at a low, and now everyone is buying and the price is going up, and he made a lot of money, and you are not going to make a lot of money, because give it a few weeks and it goes down, you've lost money, but he took his away. I'm just telling you the truth. Perception is a lot of what happens in the stock market. There is a thing called the S&P 500. I love the S&P 500. It is 500 of the largest publicly traded companies in the United States. Now, we can go back a long ways, but I need you to note something. By the way, I'm not asking you to buy the S&P 500. I will state right now I have a lot of stock in the S&P 500. I have a little bit of stock in a few individual companies that I just like, but as far as my retirement investment, this is it. I'm just sharing that. But tell me, please, answer yes or no. Has the S&P 500 always gone up? No. Has the S&P 500 ever dropped in value? Yes. But think with me for a minute. What is the trend of this S&P 500? Is it up or down? Up. It's very important. It's also important to know, if you bought an individual stock in a company, you may have bought 500 shares, and that company goes to zero, what happens to the value of your stock? It is also zero. Because remember, you own the company. If the company's value is zero, so is yours. Has anyone here remember the company named Enron? Okay. There was a lot of insider stuff going on at Enron, and I'll tell you more about it because it'll appear up on the screen, but I would not invest all of my retirement in one company. For some people, their retirement was the company they worked for. And when it went up, they were happy. Enron is one of those such companies. Most people in Enron had all their retirement in Enron shares, and when Enron went to zero, so did their retirement investments, literally to zero. The market always goes up, and it always is a wild and rocky ride along the way. Just get used to that. How often does Mike Willequit look at his S&P 500? How often is he checking the values up or down? Never. I never check. Never. I never, ever check. But you have invested in that. Yeah, I know. But I never check. People come to me, Mike, did you see the S&P? Oh, it's dropped. The market's dropped. All right, fine. I'll tell you why I love it when the market drops and someone tells me that. I actually love it, and I put more money into it. And you think I'm nuts, but I'll tell you why I do that. Questions and thoughts? Some people ask me this. Is now a good time to invest right before a possible stock market crash? A lot of people seem to think a stock market crash is just around the corner. I can't stand losing money. I want out now. Missionary said to me in 2007-8, we had the housing crisis. You may remember that. And he said, Mike, I want to take everything out of my investments, everything. I want to sell it all. I said, don't. I said, if you just leave it, if you sell it, your paper loss is a real loss. You have lost real money. But I said, just wait. Wait. He waited. It was about 2 years before the prices stabilized to where they had been when the market began to tank. He calls me again. He only calls me once every 2 years. He calls me again. He says, Mike, thank you so much for telling me not to sell. I said, what you lost now is time, but because you didn't sell, you didn't actually lose any money. We're back to where we were before. Now, that is not always. I knew he was in mutual funds. I knew he had lots of investments in his tank. That is not always good advice if you only own one company. It's totally on its way down, and it is just going to hit zero. But we're talking about he had a large pool of investments. Should I just hold off until after the crash so I can make the most of my money? The biggest problem is you don't know when the crash is going to be. Again, it's a rocky ride. It will go down and it will go up, but you don't know when that's going to happen. It looks like this is all about fear and greed. The curse of fear is what will drive you to panic and sell when you should be holding. The market is volatile. Crashes, pullbacks, and corrections are all absolutely necessary. None of them are the end of the world. None are even the end of the market's relentless rise. They're all, each and every one, expected parts of the process. I jumped online once. I just typed in something like predict stocks, predict this, or you know, stock secrets, and I get these weirdo things. This is in 2020. They said forecasts and predictions. I guess if I click there, I'd know what I'm supposed to buy. This is like a bingo game. I'm not sure what that has to do with investing. I'm not sure that I would want to do that with my investments. Okay. This guy has a crystal ball. I don't know if I'm going to trust him either. This guy looks scary enough. I don't think I'm going to trust him. He had 8 bold predictions. This one predicted a certain value. This guy used astrology to help you buy and sell. There are lots of different ideas out there. This guy, maybe he looked American enough. I might have thought to read his article, but I didn't. And then here, you know, the worst yet to come. It shows a market where it's going to drop. Be cautious. I'm not into predictions. I don't care about predictions. I don't look at newspapers for them. You say, but you're a finance guy. I don't. It's a waste of my time. No one's going to tell me exactly what's going to happen. But I do know this. The S&P 500, the trend is up. That I know, and that's important because I base all my investment choices on that understanding. Okay. Can someone tell me what this picture says to you? What term hit? What phrase have you heard? Okay, do not put all your eggs in one basket. Have you seen the price of eggs, by the way? I'm thinking about getting a chicken coop. I mean, really. My daughter, Grace, has a chicken coop, and they get like 7 or 8 eggs a day. I thought, that is so cool. Someone in the family has chickens. I want to change that idea. Don't put all your eggs in one basket for just a minute. I want you to notice that the size of these eggs and the color of these eggs are different. If my basket contained companies of different sizes, 1 billion here, 100,000 here, whatever, and they were in different sectors, you had medical devices over here, you had on this side, you had oil and gas, and over here you had something else, right? Now, wait a minute. This is a little better. My basket contains diversity, different size companies, different types of companies. Now, that is a good thing. If these were all the same eggs, of all the same type, yes, but they're not. So in my case, I wouldn't mind a portfolio, a basket, that looks like this. Now, what if I could buy 500 companies with one single purchase? What if I could buy the 500 largest companies with a purchase? Now, that makes a lot of sense. The 500 companies are largest in the U.S., they're publicly traded, and they're all different sizes and different sectors. And when a company begins to go down, its earnings drop, it's faltering, maybe its management has become poor, when it gets down to I don't know if you call this the first at the top or the bottom of the first, when it gets down to here and drops off, they put a better one in its place. It's actually self-cleansing to do that. You're still going to get the 500 largest companies in the United States who publicly trade. It's automatic. You don't have to say, that's not doing so well, I'm going to sell that. That one's doing better, there's 6 of them doing better. You don't have to do any of that. Let's talk about something here, and this is really important. I have a book, it's very interesting. It's called Where Are the Customers' Yachts? And this is a reference to the idea that those on Wall Street who have, for instance, maybe they're in charge of some mutual funds and they manage it, they buy, sell, and so on, they have a lot of spare cash. They're over here by this guy, okay? Lots of spare cash, and he may have a couple yachts. The question is, where are all the customers' yachts? Where are all the individuals that he works with to get cash for retirement or other type of investments that they're in? Where are all their yachts? truth of it is, fees are really damaging to any investment that you have. Some of your bank accounts at different banks charge you $10 a month, right? If you get below a certain amount, that adds up. That's $120 a year. If you've been with them 12 years, you're looking at over $1,000 of fees. You've got to consider fees, because fees, depending upon when they come out, can hurt you big time. And I came across this at BWM. We have a couple financial advisors that are in our BWM program, and I came across one of the fee listings for one of those companies. The fee on money given by a missionary to this company up front right away was 5.75%. See, that's not too much. You put $100 in, you get $5.75 out. The problem was this. The lady never changed her investments that she put them in. It would have been better to pay her $100 or $200 or $300 up front and just say, hey, what should I invest in? She tells you, and then you say thank you, goodbye, and you just do what she's been doing for 20 years. Because you would have spent a lot less money up front and in the end, ultimately, on that kind of advice. There are four kinds of fees. One of them is load. This is placed on the investment before it gets invested, and this is how that particular lady had managed those. So you have less that's going into the investment because the funds have been taken out right up front. There are also advisor fees. It's typical that this fee is a percentage of money you put in your investment. Sometimes this is like done per year. We're going to take 1% a year. So on some calendar date or whatever of the year, they reach in and they grab 1% of what's ever there. I remember hearing a gentleman say this to me. A missionary wanted to use someone outside our program. And the missionary said, yeah, I think it's great. I really want to use so-and-so. Because what he said to me was this. He said, I'm going to take 1% of your account every year. He said, but here's the deal. The incentive for me is this. If you do better, I do better. What I then told the missionary was this. When you lose money, he will not. Yes, when you do better, he does better. His 1% is worth more. But when you don't even make a percent, he will still make a percent. I said, that is not, he has only given you one side of the story. Am I against advisors? No, I'm not against financial advisors at all. And I'll share with you when I think it's great to use them. There's also expense ratios. This fee, usually percentage of the balance of your account end of the year, covers the cost to the company that houses your investment. This is normally small, but this will cover, like, if they don't digitally send you your statement every month and they send it in the mail, it covers their postage. It covers keeping their website up so you can get online, take a look at what things, how your account's doing and all that. So those are the basic ones. Warren Buffett said this, the economy won't do fine every year and every week, but it's a positive sum game long term. The only way an investor can get killed is by high fees or trying to outsmart the market. High fees are a given. They're like taxes. They will take funds out. Now, here's the deal. In this scenario where I had talked about the 5.75%, let's pretend that a person invested for 40 years, and they're investing about maybe $500 a month or something, whatever, for 40 years. That 5.75% ends up being over $100,000 of fees. That's a huge amount of money. That's a mass, and it's not just, it's a large amount of money. It also means that that money was not able to itself grow your investments. Because your investment money comes back in its growth, and it fuels more over time. And the longer time span you have, the less you have to put in to get the same amount in the end. All right, it's so boring that John is leaving. I'm sorry about that, John. I'll do better next time. When are higher fees worth paying? They're worth paying when you can make more than you could investing on your own after your fees are taken into account. So let's say the market was giving you 8%, but your fees were 5.75%. Your investment person better give you a really great return on that investment to make his time worth it, to cover fees like that. Also, it may be helpful to use an investment advisor when you believe that you don't have enough time to manage your investment account and are happy to pay someone else to do it. But that's about the only two reasons necessarily for most people that you would need to have an investment advisor. It's not hard to do on your own. Vanguard fees. I'm going to throw Vanguard in here, but there are other companies that charge no or low fees. And you can search those out. Vanguard, the only difference between them is they are theoretically set up as almost a nonprofit. You own them. They are basically not in it for the money that way. Yes, they make money to cover all their expenses, yes, but it's owned by you, the investor. There are no load fees. There are no advisor fees. And the expense ratio is like 0.04%. So here's the deal. If you gave this woman $6,000, her 5.75%, it's a little over 6,000, would be roughly $400. If you're with Vanguard and you had $1 million in your account, they would take out the same 400. So you can see the difference between what that looks like. 0.0004 times what you have in your account is what Vanguard will charge, and other companies may do the same. You'd have to look into those. No, I do not work for Vanguard. Joey Tacon, I won't mention his name, asked me as we were doing this online, he said, do you work for Vanguard? I said, no, I don't work for Vanguard. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. This is going to be the last of our time. We have maybe 9 minutes left. Your world is totally different now. I'm going to change it to help you understand how knowing that the S&P 500, the trend is always up, is important. Knowing that you can buy 500 of the largest companies, knowing that it is self-cleansing, the good ones come in, the bad ones go out, knowing that it takes you almost no time at all, really, it doesn't take much time at all to actually manage your investments. Your world's a bit different in regards to cost and value. If you purchase something for a given price, let's say it's a cell phone for $200, everybody's cell phone like this is now worth $200. It's the price of the cell phone today, okay? So yeah, it's new, that's fine, but it's $200. Everyone's like mine is $200. Tomorrow it may be only worth $100 or $300. That's the difference. Our world is totally different, okay? If you bought a new cell phone, it's $200. Tomorrow it may be worth $100, okay? Now, Christmas time just finished, and I like ornaments. So what we're going to do is we're going to buy ornaments today. And right now, this ornament is $100. So if I bought it today, it's $100. Dirk, if you had this ornament and you bought it 2 years ago, what's the value of your ornament now? Yes, same dollar. Everybody's ornament, just like this, is a dollar, okay? But they're having a holiday craft sale. So yesterday I bought it for a dollar. All of ours are a dollar. Today something's going on. It's called a sale. And these beautiful ornaments are now 50 cents. This is a really big problem. Because my ornament from yesterday is now worth how much? 50 cents. Okay, now I have a problem. What are we going to do? It went from a dollar to 50 cents. What are we all thinking right now? What should I do? If I'm about to buy, what should I do? Not buy. Someone is going to say, buy. Someone's going to say, well, okay, here's the problem. You're not sure what to do because you're not sure the value of the company or some other things. Is it going down? Is the next day going to be 25 cents or 10 cents, 3 cents, 1 cent, 0 cents? If this were an S&P 500 ornament, and you know the trend will always be up, your decision is different than if it were an Enron ornament. What am I going to do? Okay, so let's say you buy 550 cents a piece. Value is $50, and I had one from yesterday. So I have $50, 50 cents. Remember this, if this were a stock on the S&P 500 market, I do want you to notice something before we go too much further. I don't know if I have a pointer here that'll work, but maybe not. Yes, I do. I think, let's see here. In this area right here, some people killed themselves. This is called the Great Depression. They had money in companies alone that faltered to zero, and their wealth was down to zero. I'm not suggesting that with the ornament analogy, you just go out and you find the cheapest companies and you, when they drop, you keep buying them. That is totally against what I'm talking about today. I'm talking about a fund that has 500 companies in it. A fund that if it went to zero, that would mean the 500 largest companies in the United States have faltered to zero. Could it happen? Yes. But I'm guessing when it does happen, I'm going to have a different home than this one. Okay? That the Lord would have already taken me home. So what would I do? I would buy more ornaments. I just got my ornaments, my stock, at a discount. That is why I don't mind. I don't look at the market every day, but if someone says, hey, the market is really tanking, I may buy more. If I have spare cash, I may move it up. And then I will come out of a downtime faster because I'll have more stock that is coming up than I had when I first started with this downturn. Only follow the buy more during downtimes when you're purchasing the market, say the S&P. This is because the market has always gone up over time. If you follow the process when purchasing an individual stock, company closes, you've lost it all. Here's Enron, for instance, right? You can't see the fine lines. Well, I guess you can on that one. Around this time in Enron, the upper management was were telling, as they're selling their stock, they were telling their employees, buy, 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 we're doing really well, and then they tanked. My last thing I want to mention here before we're done is something I did, and this will help you, I believe. Back in 2005, I think it was, this is my 403B account. I had some money, and I put in, over time, maybe a couple months or more, $1,200. And then I did something unfathomable. I forgot I hadn't even invested it. I just left it alone. I didn't do anything with it. I kind of knew it was there, but I didn't know if I could remember how to log into the account. It just stayed. So I did absolutely nothing. I didn't worry. I didn't buy more. I didn't sell more. There were no fears. There were no excitement. There was nothing. It was just there. This is the best thing that could have happened to Mike Woolacott. Best. Because it taught me a really good lesson. Sometimes the best thing to do with an investment like the S&P 500 is to leave it alone. Don't get goofy. Don't start trying to day trade. And by the way, that kind of investment you want to have a year or longer. When you buy it, keep it for at least a year, because the tax on shorter than a year is more. You may have it in an investment account for retirement like 403B or IRA or something like that that helps the tax scenario, but nonetheless, mine are all in for the long term. Do you know what this is right here? These are the years 2007 and 8. That did not bode well for anybody who had money in the stock market. That was what I just mentioned to you a minute ago. That was the housing crisis, where loans were given to people that the bankers knew could not afford them. But the bankers, the individual loan agents, made a lot of money because every loan gave them money. And then you had people that defaulted, and people were defaulting all over the place. People that had houses more than they could pay for stopped paying, and the market tanked, and it affected more than just the housing market. So that dropped. But I didn't do anything. I remember, I didn't buy, I didn't sell, I didn't worry, I wasn't, you know, happy, I did nothing. Left it alone, and it recouped. My original $1,200 ended up gaining me 8.89% a year on money I just left alone. I didn't do anything. So we've got 2005, I can't remember what year this is. Yes, I know, my alarm's going off. Maybe that's 2020. I did pay like $25 a year maintenance on the account, but that was the only, that was it really. And I did really well. Now, if I had had $100,000, even better, but my rate would still be the same, 8.89% for doing absolutely nothing. So we are out of time. Next week we'll continue this, and we'll talk about more than just Michael Woolacott's investment. But let's close. Father, thank you for this time that we can have together. Thank you for your blessings and the way that you guide us. Help us, Lord, to make wise choices. Help us not to forget that in our choices to provide for our means, we also must provide for the means of others in the form of kind gifts that we give to them.